To what extent are our sufferings a gift from God to help us grow and mature? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host for commentary and discussion, applying God's Word to issues of daily living. My conversation partners are Larry Vavirka and Dave Thomas, colleagues from the Walla Walla College School of Theology. Welcome to both of you.
Appreciate being here, Alden. Thank you.
Now, let's take that question that I started with. Do sufferings come as a gift from God? Are there some that would not fit in that category? Well, let's keep it on the focus. Does God see a need and drop a bombshell to make sure that we learn? What do you think?
Oh, well, I have to tell you, I find that a very tough question, Alden. The only redeeming element I can find in that would arise from a parental motif, where a parent sees, for example, some element in a child's experience or character that could be remedied by going through a particular experience that they might find unhappy and distasteful, and so in a very loving and kind way, the parent assists the child through that. But, you know, aside from that kind of motif, the idea of suffering being deliberately dropped into our lives by God is a very difficult question.
Larry, do you have any wisdom on that one?
Well, I'm with Dave in the sense that my understanding of how God works with us is to be present in all of life, and committed to bringing learning and growth and good out of all of our life circumstances, but never violating our volition, our will, our ability to make choices, respecting that with the utmost care and dignity. And I mean, that sort of is bedrock stuff in my theology. Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe an example of my work here would be finances, that if a child has a hard time dealing with money, it may be that parents who have plenty of money will be very careful what they give to the child. And that has a potential for being very nasty, because the kids will say, "Hey, you got lots of money. Why can't I have some of it?" See? Now, is that a parallel as to how God deals with us? He senses that we have a problem, so he withholds certain things?
And see, I'm also very comfortable with the idea of natural consequences, Alden. In other words, that I think God, who is portrayed in the Bible as being a parent, may leave me to the consequences of my own wisdom and be there to bring me through to a better understanding. But, you know, as you pointed out at one point, that the Bible seems to portray God sometimes as being more active than just standing by while we face the consequence of our decision-making. You know, sometimes, and I don't know, when you read those portions of the Bible about God bringing people into difficult circumstances, I don't know if that's just a manner of speaking, or whether it's a portrayal of actual intent. It's hard to decide that.
Well, the Hebrew mind pretty much attributed everything to God's power and God's action. There was no other force involved in the outcomes of history.
In fact, in my study, which is most specifically on the Old Testament, I think one of the most intriguing passages is the story of David's census, where you have in one passage in Samuel, God tempting David to go about this unfortunate census and then punishing him, whereas in the other passage in 1 Chronicles, it is Satan who does it. And as I've thought about this, it seems to me in every event in life, every tragedy in life, it is virtually impossible for us, if we believe in God and if we believe in a demonic force, I am not able to draw a tidy line where one begins and the other ends.
And Pharaoh, it says sometimes in Exodus that Pharaoh hardened his heart, and other times it says that God hardened his heart.
Mm-hmm.
See, those are not easy to find your way through.
No. But I can see in a world where demonic forces are often worshipped, there's a practical concern why God says, don't you worry about those. I'm responsible for everything. But what that has done in the Christian world is for people to take a very, very strong attitude towards providence, and that may be one thing for myself. But when you are going through a difficulty, and I come up and cheerfully say, well, this is the Lord's will, and I'm sure you'll appreciate it in the end, those are fighting words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they cut very deeply.
But let's look at a biblical example here, a story of God leading Israel out of Egypt. Now, part of it, the story is one which we typically don't appreciate very much from our free will perspective. But if you're not afraid to read the biblical account, God's purpose there is to portray the true God as getting stronger and stronger, and the gods of the Egyptians to getting weaker and weaker. So for this to happen, Moses gets bigger and better all the way through, and Pharaoh kind of turns into a blubbering idiot by the time you're through. See, and so you have that model there, but with Israel coming out of Egypt, it seems as though God led them deliberately into a difficult place. They had the Red Sea on one side, the mountains on the other, and here was Pharaoh coming behind them. What was the purpose of all that? Can the Scripture give us any clue, or how would we explain that?
I tend to understand the response to God's singular saving act as being very different for the Egyptians and for the Israelites. The Israelites standing on the other side are singing and celebrating an act of salvation and saving. The Egyptians, on the other hand, it's the same act, it's a singular act, take a very different view of God's action. And often I think people, depending on where they stand in relationship to God's constant singular saving work, have different perspectives on what he's doing.
But see, I think of that incident also as one that was a deliberate thing by God in order to demonstrate to those who believed in him his power.
Mm-hmm. If you don't have big crises, you don't have big deliverances.
That's right, and therefore you don't, plus a little crisis doesn't call for the exercise of much faith.
Yeah. We can get out of this by ourselves, but if you get a situation where it's really desperate, then you know that God has to strike in a very similar way. Now, there's another aspect of this story, also in Exodus, at least twice. Israel ran out of water, and they complained with some vigor and enthusiasm to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why does the Lord let them go quite that far? Why doesn't he provide the water for them? Is there a reason why he lets them go to the place where they say, we're out of water, why did you do this, why can't you help us? Then he provides for their need, but why let them go so far to the place where they actually get desperate and start to complain? Can you help me with that? I don't know that I have a good answer, but I was hoping that either one or both of you would be able to come up with a good solution.
Well, you know what? One thing is that gratitude and need are well connected. You know, if your need is considerable and somebody supplies it, your appreciation and gratitude is high. Now, I don't want to portray God as somebody who's looking for gratitude, but it seems to me that if you read the whole of the Exodus story, that the people who God was leading didn't learn their lessons very easily or very well. And I think their 400 years in slavery, I've always thought, diminished their capacity to believe and to understand and to relate on a healthy way. And these are perhaps mechanisms that God is using to expand their horizons.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting connection you make there between need and a sense of gratitude. You know, if everything has been provided, and this is often the problem with children who come from wealthy homes, they never really learn to appreciate it. I've said dessert isn't really dessert if you have it all the time.
It's true.
You have to have it on special occasions where it is something really special.
All you have to have is ask, is there any dessert, and get the answer, not tonight.
And you look forward to those special events. Well, yes, tonight is the night we do have dessert. You know, cheers. See? All right, let's go to another question. Jesus' temptations. It's very intriguing that Mark's gospel, you can look at Luke 4 and Matthew 4 that actually tell the full story of the temptation, and they tend to say that Jesus was led into the wilderness by the Spirit. But then they don't make the causal connection with the temptation. But Mark actually says he drove Jesus into the temptation.
Mm-hmm. In the wilderness.
Yeah. Now, Matthew is the one who does suggest that was the purpose for being tested and tempted. What do we make of Jesus' temptations? Can you give us some clues as to why that was necessary in the larger picture? What was God trying to accomplish?
I'm glad Larry's here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'll step gingerly into that breach then. As the second Adam, as Ellen White says, going over the same ground that Adam traversed and fell, Jesus, in many respects, goes over the same ground and issues. With the issue at stake, is it inevitable that a creaturely being, a creation of God, is going to fall and distrust God? And it was really, I think it's really necessary that somehow that drama be reenacted in the mm-hmm. life of Jesus. And here's the place and the time for that to take place. It's interesting that Jesus' ministry and life seemed to be worked out according to some kind of timetable, and this seems mm-hmm. to be the appropriate time for him to establish the answer to that question.
And the nature of the temptations were far beyond anything that we would ever have to. In fact, turning stones into bread is not a temptation that I've ever suffered from.
No.
And to throw oneself down, those other kinds of things. So there was something really extraordinary here. And for Jesus to respond to those positively without missing a beat, I think is really terrible.
Larry, I kind of put you on the spot in a joking way, but I liked your answer. I like your answer.
All right.
I think it's a very good one.
All right, one last item here, and then we've got to quit, and this will be a very short one. Peter talks about us having to suffer various trials so that the genuineness of our faith may lead to the praise of God. Does anybody have a one-liner as to why our trials can lead?
I like the end of the Beatitudes. God trusts us in the most difficult circumstances to demonstrate our faith, our trust in Him. He trusts us for that.
Good. Thank you, Larry. And thank you, Dave. And thank you to John Campbell, our program engineer. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.